Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone to Missing Pages of History. As always, it's an honor to come into your homes this evening where we can fill in our missing pages. As always, Missing Pages of History is a program dedicated to underserved communities. And we're going to give you a historical perspective on issues and concerns that affect our communities on a daily basis, and we will always like to have your input by listening or calling in at 818-337-0016. Before we do all of this, we'd like to do a little house cleaning today, and that is we just remind everyone that Missing Pages of History next raffle drawing contest will take place on the 21st of May. We'd like to encourage all of our supporters to contact a memo, or they can go to our website at www.mphise.org to purchase their tickets as well as their cap and t-shirt drive. We have a monthly cap and t-shirt drive, and you know the spring is coming. We're going to be out in the community doing walk-a-thons and various cookouts, things getting to know our community and our people, and we'd like to have our supporters to support us by purchasing a cap and a t-shirt. And you can do that also by contacting its members as well as going to our website. Also, just want to inform you, coming up in the fall, a live TV program will start from September the 12th going all the way to October the 14th. Stay tuned, because we're going to be dealing with some very interesting subject. They have the facts in, and we're going to be dealing with some very important subjects. Today, we're going to continue part two of the segment dealing with slavery, how it built American capitalism. Last time we had our contributor and our historian, Emmanuel, share his perspective on the first part of this segment of slavery and how it built American capitalism. And at this stage of the program, we'd like to welcome Emmanuel back to Missing Pages of History. Welcome, Emmanuel.
Thank you.
Emmanuel, where we left off dealing with this whole topic of how slavery built American capitalism, can you give our people just a general recap of the first part of this particular subject matter?
Well, I'll just start off with the expansion of slavery in the first eight decades after American independence drove the evolution and modernization of the United States. Western capitalism is a product of slavery. Let's understand that. The slavery, in the abstract, and capitalism are fundamentally counterposed systems. In the abstract, I'll repeat this, in the abstract, capitalism and slavery are fundamentally counterposed systems. One is based on free labor, and the other is based on forced labor. I'm going to repeat that one, so you definitely get the understanding where I'm going with this. One is based on free labor, and one is based on forced labor. Capitalism itself would have been totally impossible without slavery. In the United States of America, many scholars have demonstrated that profit wasn't made just from Southern selling cotton and sugar cane that they cut, or cotton that they picked, slaves picked. Slavery was central to the establishment of the industries that today dominate the United States economy. What are those three industries? I'm going to name them for you. Remember these three establishments that dominate the United States economy. One is real estate, insurance, and finance. These are the three establishments or industries that today dominate the United States economy. Real estate, insurance, and finance. Even Wall found on slavery. Africans slaved. They built the physical wall that gives Wall Street its name. Understand. Understand, in 1711, the New York officials established a slave market on Wall Street. And they give you a little small snip of that. The most prominent American banks, including Epitaph Time, J.P. Morgan, and Wachovia, they made fortunes for slavery and accepted slaves as collateral. J.P. Morgan admitted that they had exactly 13,000 slaves as collateral and took their possessions. 13,000 slaves used as collateral for Wall Street. Not a Southern problem all the way, but also Wall Street was a part of this. And to give you one more synopsis on that, to fully, you might embrace and appreciate the importance of slavery to American capitalism, look at the horrid history of the antebellum South, and also look at one state in the South, Alabama. Lehman Brothers. They were a dry goods outfit. And we're going to look at one person, one of the foremost, probably the top 10 billionaires in this country, richest men in this country, is Warren Buffett, the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, and probably one of the richest billionaires in this country. And what did he, the antecedent to his firm, was a Rhode Island textile manufacturer, which was, again, a slave, and also the North of New England was the home of America's cotton textile industry and the hotbed of American abolitionism, which grew rich on the backs of enslaved people forced to pick cotton in the South. So the architects, you might say, of New England's Industrial Revolution, they monitored the prices of cotton, Wall Street, their textile mills, but without slave labor coming from these distant plantations, there will probably would be no Wall Street. So we look at the slave people. We look at a book. Forgot the name. Well, the name of the book is Complicity. And what it says, how the North prolonged and profited from slavery. We're going to get into the racial capitalism system. This is our second phase. I gave you a recap of the first part. We're going to talk about racial capitalism, the system, what we live in. Black people in America live in a racial capitalist system.
Can you justify and explain exactly to the audience what is racial capitalism?
Racial capitalism exercises authority over the black minority through an oppressive array of modern-day lynching by the police. Listen close to what I'm about to say here. Increasing for-profit mass incarceration and intuitively driven racial economic inequality. I'm going to repeat that. the racial capitalistic system consists of oppressive array of modern-day lynching by the police. And modern-day lynching, I'm going to get to that. Increasing for-profit mass incarceration and institutionally driven racial economic inequality. Racial capitalism is unquestionably a modern-day crime against humanity.
You know, one of the questions in terms of when you raise the question of racial capitalism, Emmanuel, people may want to know, how does it continue to exist? How does the national law enforcement or the police agency enforce racial capitalism? How does that play itself out today?
Well, the nation's police historically has enforced racial capitalism. The first modern-day police forces in America were slave patrols, watches. Well, I gave you a little history of that about 3 or 4 months ago. You can get it from our archives on the slave patrol and the night watches. And both were designed to control the behavior of African Americans. We saw that the other day at a Trump rally in Bedford, North Carolina, where a man slugged a young man was protesting just about his own business, walking up the steps, basically, and he hit him. The police jumped on the man that got hit. That was assaulted. It's the same thing. The DNA say to do this. The DNA say to do this. He assaulted a young man, but they got the one person got assaulted because he was African American. Incidents happen all the time. That's historical. Historically, literature is clear that prior to the Civil War, a legally sanctioned police force existed for the sole purpose of oppressing the slave population and protecting the property and interests of white slave owners. It's the same thing today. They protect the property and interests of white owners. The similarities between the 18th century slave patrols and modern-day police brutality community are still too salient and they dismiss or ignore it. We have to stop dismissing it and ignore it. We have to highlight it with social media at all given times. Keep your cameras down. Keep the volume up high. Keep the audio where it needs to be. We got to dismantle this. Ever since the police forces were established in America, every lynching has been the linchpin of racial capitalism, law and order. Days after the abolition of slavery, the worst terrorist organization in American history was formed, with the United States government's blessing. Those three brothers, Clue, Klux, and Klan. The majority of Americans believe that lynching they're outdated. It's a form of racial terrorism. I'm going to repeat that again. Racial terrorism, which has blighted American society. And when did it start? It's going never going in because the three brothers have the blessings of the government to keep on doing their thing. Well, again, the majority of Americans believe that religions are outdated, form of racial terrorism. But, you know, Jim Crow has worsened over the time. You have the modern Jim Crow. A newspaper, can't think of it at the moment, I think it was called The Guardian. And they basically said, during the late 19th and early 20th century, on an average, 2 African Americans were lynched every week. Every week. 2. I mean, 104, basically, minimum, was lynched in a year. You compare this data with the FBI data that a black person is killed by a white police officer twice a week. So I'm comparing the lynching of twice a week in the 18th and early 1900s, in the 1700s, 2 per week lynching, and the same thing as the modern day lynching, of course, is shooting our young men, unarmed black men. Killed by not a black police officer, by a white police officer, twice a week. Clear signal that police brutality in the black community is getting worse, not better. I want to explain lynching to you, the modern day lynching. Lynching does not necessarily mean hanging. It includes things of this nature. Humiliation, torture, burning, dismemberment, castration. See, lynching was quintessential American public ritual at one time that often took place in front of large crowds. You watch it on television, the movies they make, and sometimes numbered in the thousands. And the kids are just having fun. They were doing festivity activities. But I'm going to describe one lynching for you, the latter-day lynching of the abolition of slavery in 1899. I think it was the Springfield Weekly newspaper that described the lynching by the KKK. And here is, I'm going to chronologize a lynching that's historical. The black man was deprived of his ears, fingers, and general parts of his body. He pleaded pitifully for his life while the mutilation was going on. Before the body was cooled, it was cut into pieces, the bones crushed into small bits. The black man's heart was cut into several pieces, as also his liver. Small pieces of his bones sold for 25 cents.
Wow. That reminds you of some of the stuff that's still going on today. Seems like more things change, more remain the same. But Emmanuel, I know a lot of times when we look at our people who talk about our history and our struggles, they use different concepts and words that may make you think they may mean something different. In terms of this context of racial capitalism and racial terrorism, how are they different or how are they similar? Can you explain the dynamics between those two terms?
Well, they're the same, basically. Racial capitalism is racial terrorism, which is to this day, the government refuses to designate the Ku Klux Klan as a domestic terrorist organization. I'm going to repeat that. The United States government refuses to designate the Ku Klux Klan, the three Ks, the three brothers, Ku Klux and Klan, as a domestic terrorist organization. Now, racial terrorizing black communities goes hand in hand with the systemic containment and imprisonment of blacks. Most of the time, don't let you get a lawyer. They intimidate you. They threaten you. This is terrorism. They terrorize you and your community. They terrorize witnesses. They terrorize people, your neighbors. They terrorize the neighborhood. They knock down doors. They bring in, you might say, military-type equipment in a community. They don't care about anything about that community, anything about that particular zip code. But again, thanks in large part to the racially motivated war on drugs. War on drugs. I'm going to do a probably two-part series on the war on drugs, how it all got started, who is actually buying the drugs, what states the drugs are in, and who can afford these drugs. You're going to be shocked of the drugs, how they get up in here, how they are sold, who sold them, and the height of where they're sold, exactly where it's coming from, and who is protected so the drug can keep going, drugs can keep selling. They're not going to stop. But to give you a statistic, the United States right now incarcerates more African Americans as a percentage than South Africa did at the height of apartheid. That's amazing. For profit incarceration.
Emmanuel, you know, when we talk about this issue of the historical terrorism that black communities or African communities faced back in the 18th and 19th century, many people would say that's issues of the past. Are you stating also that racial terrorism exists today in the various Africans or black communities today?
Yeah, I think I said earlier that they lynch two blacks per week. They shoot two blacks per week. This is like just modern day lynching and what they're using to lynch them with. We still have the thousands of people looking up. The media makes sure this happens. But thanks to social media, we can see this and it's all just caught next time. See, but private prisons were designed by the rich. And to make money for the rich. Well, who in the private prison? Well, African Americans are. But here's the interesting statement I'm going to give you guys, my listeners. The for-profit prison system depends on imprisoning blacks for its survival. It will not survive without putting you in prison. This is much in the same way the United States was designed. We are designed for that. The United States, I'll give you another interesting stat. There are more black men in prison, in jail, or on probation, or on parole, than were enslaved in 1850, before the Civil War began. Let that one sink in. Again, there are more black men in prison, in jail, on probation, on parole, that were enslaved in 1850, before the Civil War began.
That's interesting. In terms of looking at America, historical behavior, where it relates to black communities in the 19th century, how did it take off during the 19th century? How was behavior from 19th century? And how you compare it to the present day?
Well, in spite of slavery, slavery basically ended. The 19th century, the takeoff in America, its larger thanks to capitalism again. Capitalism was created by slavery, and slavery in turn created the enduring legacy of racial capitalism that persists in America today. Capitalism was created by slavery, and slavery in turn created the enduring legacy of racial capitalism that persists in America today. I'm going to sum this up. There has been historically sharp contrast between America's lofty ideas on one hand, and on the other hand, we are permanent second-class citizens. I'm going to repeat that. There has been historically been a sharp contrast between America's lofty ideas on one hand and seemingly permanent second-class status of African-Americans on the other hand. The 19th century, the late 19th century, you might say, we had the Statue of Liberty brought in here, overseeing the arrival of immigrants in the New York Harbor. That's where it's situated at. Natives or foreigners, they came to America. But black southern peasants, they called us, not aliens. We were totally, alienated. We were kept enslaved at the social margins. What are the social margins? That you couldn't own but a few things. They're going to make sure that you have no ownership in the capitalism. They're going to make sure they're going to keep you at a certain status low. And that's what has happened, the margins. You're not going to get involved in the big three. That's real estate, insurance, and definitely not going to get involved in finance. They're going to make sure of that. Those are three things that dominate, and we're not going to be in those dominating areas. You were alienated at the social margin. The hypocrisy of a racist ideology that openly questions the black man's human worth. What are we worth? Well, today, far from being a post-racial nation, America's racial equality indicators and race relations at a new low. To this day, I'm going to repeat this, far from being a post-racial nation, because you have a black president, don't mean a thing. They treat him just like dirt. They treat him inhuman also. Don't mean a thing. Everything he tried to do, they make sure they don't. Racism has raised its ugly head and is real strong as of today. The racial equality indicators that I've given you and race relations are a new low. They don't even want to talk about it. The American race problem is our greatest national dilemma. It continues to pose the greatest threat to America's democratic experiment, because we are an experiment. Simmering discontent in black communities will continue to rise toward a dangerous boiling point unless we deal with this ongoing racial capitalism. And how do you deal with it? You have to expose it and completely dismantle it. And I will give you the way to do that during this year. I'll make sure that you understand how to dismantle it and expose it and to be a big part of insurance, finance, and real estate.
Emmanuel, I want to answer this question. Then we have a few minutes. We're going to open up to our listening audience who may have some comments or some questions concerning this subject of slavery and how it built American capitalism. But you made a statement earlier in your presentation around the concept of free labor and forced labor. Can you explain those two dynamics, the differences between the two? Free labor and forced labor.
Well, it's not much difference between the two. One is basically, like I said before, one, capitalism is based on free labor. And forced labor was slavery. That means you were forced to work without any pay at all. Where in free labor, you can work and get paid. And where you get paid on a marginal basis, that's another problem. Because we're not. Regardless what we do, we're not paid the same. The inequity of pay, the same as women, are not the same. So capitalism, basically, when I talk about free labor, is basically capitalism. You're free with your labor, do what you want to do, and get paid. Sometimes you don't get paid, but again, it's free labor. You do it of your free will. But forced labor, that you're forced to do something without getting paid at all, that's labor. Illustration, some of the books and illustrations, it shows a white person with a whip in their hand, with a gun on their side, sometimes on a horse, with a whip. That's forced labor. And they showed you that pictorially. The image, they showed you that. That's, again, brainwashing, brutality, a certain way. That they will continue doing this in some modern way. They gave police sticks, blackjacks, stun guns now, weapons, to make sure that this same image is forced in the modern day capitalism. But like I said again, in the abstract, capitalism and slavery are fundamentally counterposed systems. And one is based on free labor and the other on forced labor. But however, in practice, capitalism itself would have been impossible without slavery.
Okay, Emmanuel, we got a few minutes left. We're going to open up our line to our listening audience. This is Missing Pages of History. We'd like to remind you that this is a bi-weekly program. You can hear it at 1 p.m. Eastern Time every other week. Our next program will be March 19th. You also can view our archives by going to our website. That's www.mphinc.org and listen to past programs as well as place your orders for your caps and t-shirts and support Missing Pages of History. We encourage you to go and check out our website, but more importantly, we encourage you and need you, and we have a membership drive now. We have opened up now an organization for new members. We'd like to have those who's interesting in terms of helping us to improve our communities and help fill in our missing page of history to join us. We have a section where you can fill out the application, and from that point, someone will contact you, and we have a process in which you will become initiated and become an active member for Missing Pages of History. This organization needs your support, needs your help. We'd like to have you. So please contact us. Go to our website at www.mphinc.org. Right now, our phone line is 818-337-0016. If you have a common view, please hit 1 now. if we acknowledge your last four numbers. 818-337-0016. We have a call on the line. We have a call, the last four numbers is 4298. We can bring in caller 4298. Caller, your question or comment, please. Welcome
yeah,
to
I just want to thank. Yeah, I just want to thank you for producing your show. It's very informative, and I just want you to keep up the good work. That's the main thing I want to say. Thank you.
All right, thank you, caller. Next, we have another caller. Caller, we're going to 9289. Caller 9289, you're now on Mr. Page's history. Your question or comment, caller 9289.
Yes, I just want to say I enjoyed this show, especially getting the second part, because it was only just, excuse me, one thing. I know with the sugar cane and the cotton, but wasn't tobacco also a big part of this, of them with the capitalism?
Guessing, man, you're the caller asking question, the role of tobacco, how did it fit into the whole equation of this whole industry of slavery and the very off in the South issue and et cetera, et cetera.
It did not figure in as much as cotton. Cotton was a staggering 50% of the U.S. exports. We wasn't shipping tobacco because nations have tobacco. We wasn't doing that. But what happened was, why that particular time, the South grew from a narrow coastal strip of worn-out tobacco plantations. Tobacco plantations got worn out because, again, the three things that keep everything going, basically, is even the Bible speaks of it. The three, one of them, of course, is shelter, food, and basically clothing. So cotton made clothing. So tobacco was not in the main three. So that's why tobacco, but again, the three main, the tobacco basically got worn out. Because tobacco could not be very prosperous in certain areas. And it took too much to get, you couldn't do too much with tobacco. It's more like a industry that was controlled by families, basically. But cotton wasn't. Textile was the big thing. Textile making everything from, you know, everything in clothing to going into automobiles. It got into a huge thing. That's why the North ran it. The North ran it. And I guess, again, that was a huge success. Because tobacco was not 50%. Of the United States exports. Again, tobacco was a very narrow type thing in the South. Tobacco was it. You could only smoke it, that was it. After you smoke, what do you do with it? But textile, that was the cotton empire, you might call it. So it changed from, of course, growing cotton, tobacco, became a more like a secondary product. The tobacco did not grow into a modern industrial capitalist economy. Cotton did because what it entails.
You know, Emmanuel, I think at the beginning of the program, one of the most interesting statements was a statement where you stated that Western capitalism is a product of slavery. To me means that there are probably no institution exists in a capitalist system that did not have some kind of relationship to slavery. I think that would that be a correct assumption,
yes,
analysis, mate? That would be a correct one? Okay,
well,
if slavery, that is true.
Yeah, slavery was basically central to the establishment of industries that today dominate the United States economy. I said again, real estate, insurance, and finance. And that's done basically up north. So North Wall Street was founded on slavery. So like I say, it's not a regional thing where slavery was down south. The labor was done down south, basically, the labor. Again, let's take the two. The textile mills of North paid people. Slaves are not paid. That's just between the two. That's the contrast. When they moved everything up north to get shipped out, to the European nations. It was shipped out through the northern ports. It wasn't shipped out through the southern ports. That's how Wall Street became part of that. And I tell you again, collateralizing slaves to J.P. Morgan and Wachovia banks made a fortune. That's how they got their money, the loans, to do what they need to do down south. The loans making through the banks up north. But you're right.
In closing, man, you got a couple of minutes. I'd like you to speak to this point, then you just do your summary, close out, for the subject of slavery and how it built American capitalism. To whose interest is it to uphold and continue capitalism if we understood when it comes to the African community, the black community, that it was founded as a result of our enslavement?
Yeah.
Do you just speak to that in general?
Give me the question again. I didn't quite get the question.
To whose interest is it to uphold or support or push its capitalism? Because it seems to me if we continue to push capitalism, we can continue to push those industries that have created a scenario of using racial terrorism, racial police enforcement, to continue to terrorize the African community, the black community. It seems like from the history you have stated, it's intertwined as part of the makeup of the system. So why would we maintain something that continues to limit and oppress us? So I'm just raising the question of, from the history of all this being the foundation of the continuation of slavery, then those who are in power have no interest to want to change it.
Yeah, they're not going to change it. It's got to be totally dismantled. Like I said before, it's got to be totally dismantled and exposed. We don't expose it. We are 12.5% of the population. We're not going to do a whole lot with it, but again, we got to participate in it. And the three things we have to participate is, again, real estate, insurance, and finance. This is what we have to get involved in. And I was doing exercises, and I've been doing speeches to get involved in that. I'll be talking about basically takeovers. We're going to be talking about takeovers, acquisitions, things are going to be taken over so you can fully participate in the capitalist system. We're in a system that we can't get out of. It's what it is. It's built up to a degree that's not going to dilute itself, no type of way. We have to dismantle it the way it is. After we expose it, then how to participate in it.
Okay, we'd like to thank our listening audience and supporters for listening today to Missing Pages of History. Remember, this is a bi-weekly program. Comes on at 1 p.m. every other Saturday. We'd like to remind you that our next program will be March the 19th. Please share the word that Missing Pages of History is a program dedicated to the community of those who have been underserved. We want you to come and join us and help us fill in these missing pages. We'd like to remind you, in terms of our ongoing activities, that we are having a T-shirt and cap drive this month. You can go to our website, purchase your T-shirt and your cap, or call one of the MPH members. Our website is www.mphinc.org. Also, we'd like to give a shout-out to our last week raffle drawing winners. We'd like to thank first prize Andrea Lee Gardner. We'd like to thank second prize Rita Joyner. And we'd like to thank third prize Pat Robson for being our winners on our first year raffle ticket fundraiser drive. And our next one will be on May 21st. And if you haven't got your tickets yet, they are available. Please contact MPH members. If you just outright like to support us as well to join us, you can contact us through our website or you can contact us through our P.O. Box. That's P.O. Box MPH, P.O. Box 27, 782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. Until next